Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello everyone and welcome back to a brand new video and welcome back to episode 137 of your favorite Episode 167 of your favorite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I are back to discuss the Australian Grand Prix over the weekend. There's plenty of drama that we can clickbait this one with, and despite all that drama, it was still pretty dull, wasn't it, Jamie? But yeah, we'll discuss that as we go on. But of course, before we get into that, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm doing well. I've had a haircut since last week because I wanted to look my best for this episode of the podcast. Yeah, it's going well.
Yeah, you happy with your new trim?
No, I was just saying before the usual barber wasn't my usual guy wasn't there, so I've been done dirty of it. It needs to by next week I think it'll be solid, but right now. I'm not a fan.
Fair enough.
Needs to marinate a bit.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, let's head to Australia then, Albert Park. Of course, the all-important question, which it was the first thing pretty much we asked each other today, was did either of us get up for the Australian Grand Prix 4 in the morning? And I believe because you don't get to watch many Grand Prix, you actually took the opportunity.
I did. I felt very pleased with myself for getting up nice and early. 3:52 alarm was fun to be setting on Saturday night. But we got it done. Got up for the race. And yeah, I'm quite glad I did. It was worth getting up for. I also don't hear Martin Brundle very often. And it's nice to have the Sky live coverage when Martin Brundle's on, because obviously these days they've put the F1 TV commentary on the highlights, which I prefer Crofty, not going to lie.
Do you?
Crofty and Brundle.
Interesting. I would have Alex Jakes every day of the week. Well, to be honest, I don't know whether you'd agree with me, I'd still have Ben Edwards given the choice.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame, obviously,
yeah,
the Channel 4 stuff isn't live, because Ben Edwards is, I would say, the GOAT of modern commentary, anyway. Always got to love a little bit of Murray as well, haven't you? Back in the day.
Back in the day, of course.
He did commentate many an Australian Grand Prix of his own as well. But we can't go too far back in terms of the nostalgia, because, of course, we're here to talk about the 2024 Grand Prix. Although, we have discussed it before, haven't we? Retro podcasts would be so fun to do. In the future, but that would rely on a few other things falling into place first and foremost. But the drama really kicked off, didn't it, immediately in FP1, because Alex Albon stacked his car.
Yeah, quite a bad crash, wasn't it, on the exit of turn 6, and damaged his chassis enough to mean that they had to withdraw that chassis. And Williams being Williams and having all kinds of logistical issues over the last 18 months, or the last 5 years really, isn't it?
Last 20
they
years.
Only, yeah, they only had one. They didn't bring a spare chassis to Melbourne. They don't have a spare chassis right now because they were so, like, everything was delayed over the winter. So they've only developed two chassis. And yeah, that meant that they only had one left when Albon crashed. And they couldn't repair it in time or bring a new one over. Obviously, there's none to bring over. So they had to have the hard decision of which driver to enter with their one chassis they had left, and they took the controversial decision to enter Alex Albon in Logan Sargeant's chassis, which went down like a treat on Twitter. But I feel for James Vowles. I obviously feel for Logan Sargeant, but I think it was the right thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. I got some hate for this on Twitter as well, but I was very much A horrible choice to make? Yes, absolutely. The right choice to make? Also absolutely correct. My favourite one is, did you hear Alex Jakes in the intro?
Yes, yes, there's Alex... a happy birthday to Alex Albon on Saturday morning. His, what was it, his gift?
Logan his Sargent's gift from car. Williams? Logan Sargent's car. So brutal, but so yeah. funny as well. It did really make me chuckle. But, I mean, yeah, like, we might get some confusion and hate for it now, why we both think this was absolutely the right choice. And we've said it so many times before, and it's something that so many people still forget, isn't it, Jamie? Formula One isn't fair. All these teams are businesses looking to try and score as many points as possible. And Alex Albon has a much better shot at scoring points than Logan Sargeant does currently. Whether you base that on last year's performance, whether you base that on the opening two Grand Prix of this year's performance. That's just the case. That we've got in front of ourselves there. And yes, obviously, not fun for Logan. He's having to spend the weekend upside down, and he effectively just gets to do nothing with it. But, you know, that is, unfortunately, part of the harsh reality of being the number two driver in a Formula One team like that. Occasionally, you get a little bit screwed over. You know, had this happened... to be honest, I was thinking about it as well. I would say, with maybe the exception of... Actually, I don't even think Red Bull would need to do it. I think Williams are probably the only team, maybe Alfa Romeo, are probably the only teams that, if a driver stacked it, they would get the other driver's car. I don't think any other team would probably make that switch.
I mean, but Red Bull would, but they wouldn't need to.
I don't think they would, exactly. I don't think they would need to, so they wouldn't worry.
No. But, I mean, they also have three chassis at any Grand Prix, well, so that's a non-issue for them. The issue for Williams is they only had two. I don't think... Yeah, I think the difficulty was it was Albon's mistake at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Which, so had the car, you know, failed on him and he crashed it for that reason, I think it would have been no decision at all to give it to Albon. But, yeah, I guess kind of like thinking back, Silverstone 2010 springs to mind when Vettel... and Webber had both had a new front wing at Silverstone, and Vettel's front wing failed in final practice, and they only had two, and then obviously only had one, so they gave the new front wing to Vettel based on championship position, supposedly.
I don't think it was, which, though, was it? I was just about to say that. Let me check.
He was just ahead in the championship. I know that for a fact. Vettel was ahead by about 2 points after Valencia, because obviously Webber crashed.
Was it Valencia beforehand, was it?
Yeah. Okay. And they gave it to they gave the new wing to Vettel, and then Webber qualified second by a couple of hundredths, and then overtook him into turn one, won the race. Says on the radio, not bad for a number two driver. And
your accent, and fair play.
That was a good accent, wasn't it?
And then, I was staggered by that. I thought I was going to be terrible.
And then Webber's ahead of the championship, so that's a fun story for you. But yeah. Since then, I can't remember a time when there's been a failure on a part, and they've chosen to give the other parts to the first driver. Obviously, with upgrades, the first driver always gets preferential treatment. So it's just kind of that, but in reverse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, probably the closest example I can think of in very recent years was obviously Bottas had a couple of races sacrificed in 2021, didn't he? When Mercedes were experimenting with the new engine. Obviously, Hamilton, that absolute missile for the final few Grand Prix. But yeah, I mean, like we said, it was harsh on Logan, absolutely. Was it the right choice? I don't think either of us doubted it. But of course, by the end of the weekend, it made no difference because, spoiler alert, Williams didn't score a point anyway. But absolutely, you know, when you look at the way the rest of the weekend went, Williams could have been really kicking themselves if they've left Logan out there because, you know, they were in the running.
There were points on the
table. To try and squeeze a point or two out of it. But let's move on then into qualifying, Jamie. Q1, Esteban Ocon. I don't think either of us would have said this out of the winter. Esteban Ocon, the first time Alpine have made it into Q2 this year.
Yeah, and he was delighted with a P15, which kind of says it all, really, doesn't it, with how Alpine are doing. But the funniest thing for me was Kevin Magnussen was originally knocked out, wasn't he, in 16th place. And then halfway round his in-lap, or maybe actually he was coming back into the pits, they had to tell him, no, stay in the car. Ricardo's had his lap time deleted like a minute later. And then Magnussen was through in 15th place, and Ricardo was out in, I think, 18th in the end, wasn't he? So yeah, it's that was quite amusing. But fair play to Ocon. You know, it's they're in a crisis right now, and it's nice for the drivers to have a little bit of something to give them a bit of cheer. But still, a long way to go, obviously.
Yes, yeah, and they were, like you said, obviously Magnussen squeezed by, Ricciardo ended up out because he ran massively wide. I'm not even sure why he continued the lap, to be honest, because I would have thought even from the cockpit you would be certain you ran massively wide through turn four on the exit. But yeah, they were joined obviously by Hülkenberg, Gasly, and Zhou Guanyu, who then ran
whose
into even
fell
more
apart.
Problem, didn't he? Yeah, his wing fell apart at the end of qualifying. Sauber are having an absolute disaster as well this year.
Yeah.
And because they had no spare wings of the same design, he was forced to start from the pit lane, wasn't he, I believe?
Yeah, for Parc Fermé reasons. They couldn't replace it like for like. So they had to start from the pit lane and give him an old spec. Yeah, Sauber are having so many like logistical problems that a Formula 1 team should be not having. With these cross-threaded rear nuts as well that have struck them at least once a race on average. Twice this weekend, I think it was. Yeah, which is appalling. And they're not going to be able to fix it until they can develop a new wheel gun, which won't happen for Japan, they've said already.
Yeah.
So one of them is going to be screwed over again with a slow pit stop by average. But,
see, it always staggers me with that as well in Formula 1, because obviously the tyres are provided by Pirelli. You would have thought something like that would have been homologated, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because they must all have a universal joint to keep them on the tyre rim, you'd imagine.
Well,
as
my
in,
guess
like,
is that
you
they
know, keep the tyre on the car. Yeah, surely they don't, or the design can be different. But why would, I guess, why would you complicate if it worked last year? I guess it's all always development, isn't it? But whatever they've done really hasn't worked, and they keep having genuinely 50-second pit stops. Sorry. So Bottas, I heard a stat that he's got the longest pit stop in Formula 1 and the second longest pit stop in Formula 1, with over a minute in Bahrain and over a day in Monaco back in 2019.
Yeah, no, I think that's still there's definitely been worse pit stops in Formula 1 than the minute one.
Well, I guess Massa's back in Singapore 08,
exactly. That was two pit stops in one pit lane.
Yeah,
but there we are. Yeah, I mean, moving on though into Q2, the big shocker, Lewis Hamilton out. And I well, when I woke up, that was the first thing I saw on Twitter, or X, or whatever we're meant to call it now, and I just wasn't even shocked.
Yeah, I get the feeling that he's given up on Mercedes, and he's kind of counting down the days till he can go to Ferrari. I don't know if you saw the shot of him later in the race. Spoilers, he didn't finish the race, and Ferrari got a 1-2. He was just like slyly grinning in the Mercedes garage towards the end of the race when Ferrari are bringing home a 1-2. Yeah, I feel like he's checked out. He's done.
Yeah, with Lewis, I think the thing is, well, of course, we've seen him over the last couple of years, haven't we? And I'm trying to kind of cope myself. I want to believe still at the moment that obviously he's not comfortable in that car, so he's doing a bit of a 2022 where he's trying setups, just trying this, that, or the other. Because both drivers are still adamant and really pushing a narrative that this car isn't bad like the two preceding ones. But until we kind of get that evidence on the track at the moment, I mean, you'd probably say Mercedes are fourth fastest and kind of closer to Aston Martin behind them than they are to McLaren and Ferrari in front, which is really not a good look, because obviously alongside that, not only obviously is it not good for your two current drivers, but if you're trying to get someone else into that team next year, what kind of driver, you know, unless obviously they're in a back market car or something like that, you know, if you're a Fernando Alonso, why would you want to join a team that's going backwards, apart from obviously the huge paycheck that comes with it?
And I think it's the trust that they're in they're like a sleeping giant, aren't they now? It's kind of like why people went to Ferrari, why Seb went to Ferrari in 2014 for the 15. When they'd finished like fifth in the championship, or fourth or fifth in the championship with a couple of podiums that year. Like, you know that they have the potential to get back, and you kind of have to almost gamble that this is just a bit of a rut that they're going to get out of.
Well,
obviously, it sucks for Russell and Hamilton right now, but Hamilton's on his way out, so I'm sure he's looking forward to that.
I guess the thing is with Mercedes is, of course, because they're, in the grand scheme of things, still very new to Formula One, we've got no evidence to support that they can get back out of this rut, have we?
Yeah, because it could have just been like a very long golden era, like 8 years, and then that's their equivalent of Flash in the Pan. Obviously, 8 years is an extremely long time, especially if you're watching it at the time, which we obviously were.
It's a record-breaking long time in F1.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like something like the Team Lotus just dominated in the 60s and then never really got back to the top.
Or look at Williams more recently than that.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a golden era of, 11, 15 years or so. And that was kind of it. They racked up a load of championships, and then they're kind of, now they're just kind of floating around the midfield.
Everyone is jumping them.
Yeah.
Everyone is jumping them in terms of stats. But yeah, Hamilton, joined by Albon, Bottas, Magnussen, and obviously Ocon in Q2. Q3 then, there were a few little bits of storylines going in, but there were kind of no major shocks, was there, in the end? Max Verstappen took pole. Carlos Sainz, actually, fair play to him, after appendicitis, obviously having his appendix removed, qualified P2 after Charles Leclerc had a bit of a messy qualifying. With Perez P3, he then got a three-place penalty for blocking Hülkenberg earlier on, so he dropped to P6. So Norris got bumped up to the second row. Norris ended up in P3 ahead of Leclerc. With homeboy Piastri ahead of Russell, Sonoda, Stroll, and Stroll putting half a second on Alonso at the end of qualifying. I don't think
Alonso
either
didn't
of us
bother.
Predicted that.
No, I don't think Alonso bothered with his last lap in quali, did he? He messed it
no,
up. But
no.
Leclerc was the favourite for pole, I think, in the paddock at least.
Well, he was in your
based
eyes.
Based on practice. Well, yeah, I was very excited having predicted Leclerc on pole because in practice that looked the way to be. But then he completely messed up his final laps in Q3. And that's becoming
Don't say that's becoming a common occurrence for Leclerc with his record
not common.
In recent times.
I know he's got a good record, but it feels like this season he's had a couple of poles, that or like a couple of moments where you could have had a Leclerc golden lap in Bahrain and now in Melbourne. And they haven't quite come through like they may be used to. So,
I think that's harsh. Here, yes, absolutely. I think Bahrain is a bit unfair still.
Maybe. He definitely wasn't the favourite in Bahrain, but he could have done. He could have snatched pole in the Leclerc way, and he didn't.
Can we just quickly, Jimmy, I want you to close your eyes for me. And
okay.
Imagine a hypothetical scenario.
I thought you were being serious. Okay.
Yeah, I am. Oh, I am.
Oh, I'm closing my eyes. All right, we're in.
Good man. So, we're gonna pretend that this is 8 years ago in Formula One. Okay?
What's
the year
2016?
Is 2016.
That's mad. That's 8 years ago, by the way.
It is. It's horrendous, isn't it? We are so old. Carlos Sainz has just had his appendix removed. And immediately, he goes and out-qualifies Charles Leclerc. How long after the Australian Grand Prix do you think it would have taken before Nico Rosberg worked out whether that surgery would be worth it as well for an extra 0.3 of Grand Prix across an entire race? He absolutely would have done it.
Genuinely, obviously, it makes no difference now because the driver weight is taken out of it. It's balanced back up to 80 kilos. Back then, driver weight did matter. That's why Rosberg stopped cycling over the summer, as we've said before.
Probably stopped shagging his wife or sleeping with his wife, I should say.
PG audience, apologies for that. I genuinely think Rosberg would have done it 100%.
Genuinely,
he probably would have removed like a kidney as well, removed anything he doesn't need.
Can I have like my fourth fingers removed? Like on both hands. I don't need them in the car. It'll be fine.
That'll save me a few hundredths a lap, and I might beat Lewis.
I'm staggered going into the final few Grand Prix. He didn't have his eyebrows shaved or something like that.
I bet he shaved everything else.
Oh, I guarantee you, he was smooth as a Barbie doll down there.
Yeah, that's an outrageous thought. That's jokes. He could have gone bald. He should have done that.
He basically
imagine
did,
winning
though,
the championship.
He?
And you're bored. That'd be so like sad.
Oh man, that again is another podcast we could do at some point of the ridiculous lengths Nico Rosberg went to
Mate,
try
paid
and
off.
Win he the got... 16 World Championship. Imagine if it hadn't though. You're a bald, eyelashless Nico Rosberg.
Not got your appendix or your wife.
Three stitches everywhere.
Oh dear. Well. Thankfully
just
for him, it worked out.
Celebrates another one championship alongside like Rita Ora.
Oh dear. We should move on.
Oh, that's
we definitely
so
should.
Funny.
Right, I'm going to get Matt back loud, give him some time to recover, and move on to Sunday's race. Sunday's race, which was for the first time on a Sunday, which is nice. You know, Max Verstappen hasn't won a race on a Sunday since Abu Dhabi. That's mad.
Yeah, I believe you. That's true.
There you go. Lap one. Lights are out. There's 18 drivers on the grid. Joe's in the pit lane. Logan's on the pit wall.
Logan's crying.
Yep. And lap one, nothing much really happens, which is a shame. It's obviously a short run to turn one, so understandable.
Didn't it?
Perez loses his place to George Russell for P6. But, doesn't really matter in the long haul. But the most important thing was that immediately there were signs that, not Carlos signs, there were warning signs that Max Verstappen had the beginnings of a brake problem on his right rear. And lo and behold, lap two comes around. Verstappen goes deep at turn three. Could it be that we've got a challenge for the win? Carlos Sainz down into turn 10 on the second lap has a DRS, has the race lead from his former teammate. And everyone who got up at 4 a.m, including myself, is like, oh, what's going on here? We actually got a race on our hands. And then we see some smoke from the back of Max Verstappen's car. And even as a Max Verstappen fan, but more so a Formula One fan, I was pleased that we weren't going to see another boring, dominant Max win, because he was out of the race.
And I can say, in contrast to Jamie there saying about even as a Max fan, I can say not as a Max fan, and despite knowing it already happened, watching it back on the highlights, it still put a smile on my face.
Yeah, I was in the old Twitter DMs with my mate Alex, who's a big Lewis Hamilton fan, still hasn't got over 2021, one of those guys. He said at 4 a.m. he physically celebrated and ran around his living room watching the race that Max Verstappen retired.
I mean, well, apparently, wasn't it? Yeah. The problem had developed literally from the start, wasn't it? That the rear brake never fully...
It was stuck on, basically. There was
stuck on,
blocking.
It never fully unlocked again. So obviously it was potentially why he was ever so, obviously the rear brakes on a Formula One car aren't that powerful anyway, but of course basically it meant potentially was why obviously he struggled, and hence why Sainz got such a run past him as well.
Yeah,
because let's be fair, we have not seen a car go past a Red Bull like that in probably since Hamilton in Brazil 2021.
Yeah, maybe.
But it was absolute scenes, wasn't it, at the start of the Grand Prix? Because, of course, it then meant that with Max Verstappen out, there might actually... This is basically what we spent most of last year trying to claim, that had Max Verstappen not been there, it would have been a season for the ages. But to be honest, if anything, this weekend kind of proved that actually it's not just Max Verstappen that's the problem at the moment in Formula One. At the end of the day, these cars are just too heavy, aren't they? They're too big, they're too heavy.
A little bit.
They need to lose about 200 kilos.
Yeah, and it does feel like, especially at Melbourne, with the just every corner is like a medium speed corner or a high speed corner, they couldn't follow each other. They really, really couldn't. We haven't seen that in a long time. And that's what the rules meant to fix. But straight as soon as Carlos Sainz took the lead on lap two, he was gone, especially in the latter stages of each stint. It would kind of be around two and a half seconds to Leclerc for like most of the stint. And then as the stint went on, Sainz's pace just went off. Like, he was 10 seconds clear before the first stops. And then Leclerc pitted and Sainz had like three or four laps in hand for the undercut. Came out still just ahead of Leclerc. They timed it to perfection. It almost felt like they were trying to give Leclerc the beneficial strategy. But when Sainz did have the lead after the first stops, obviously he's now got track position and a fresh set of tyres, so he just was gone. And he, again, made it 7-8 seconds by the end of the stint. So he is the only driver to have won last season that wasn't in a Red Bull. He's the only driver to have won in the last year that isn't named Max Verstappen.
Is that true? No, not quite yet, sure.
Perez won round four, didn't he?
In Baku, which was surely...
So give it three weeks and that'll be true.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And he won the race. Spoiler. He just had it.
He never looked back, did he? I mean, the way you described that then, it was pretty simple, wasn't it, from Carlos Sainz? This was a man with an opportunity who knows full well he has got no seat next year, as of right now. who is trying to inflate his stock as quickly as he can, and it was a drive by... Don't get me wrong, I don't think either of us are ever going to claim, you know, unless Sainz gets like a Button-style year, he's not going to be a Formula One world champion, is he? But he is absolutely still deserve, you know, of a race win, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he took the opportunity this weekend with both hands.
Yeah, totally. He's kind of that second-tier driver, you know, the likes of Button or, like, Mark Webber, Felipe Massa, who, if they're lucky, might get
a Barrichello, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And a Sergio Perez, Hülkenberg, I put in that conversation as well.
Well, Hülkenberg can't get a podium. Let's just calm ourselves down a little bit.
Not that he can't.
Well, he can, clearly.
Never had the chance, never had the chance.
Oh, behave. I'm not going to listen to that.
He's had about two chances.
He's had about 15 chances.
we'll get back to them later. But, really, nothing much really happened until lap 17 when the karma came and bit the Lewis Hamilton fans who were celebrating around their living room because he also had a retirement. Lap 17, he wasn't up to much in the race, really. I think he's running 10th, and the engine just gave up. Much
tried
like
to go up to 8th, didn't he? And it just went, nah, good.
Yeah, the car gave up on him, just like he's given up on the team. So, yeah, that was caused a VSC, a very short VSC, but it did allow Fernando Alonso to pit and jump ahead of Perez and Russell, and also Nico Hülkenberg, who'd gone long in the first stint from 16th on the grid and rejoined about 12th, I think, 11th or 12th. So did him a favour, which was nice. And then, the race kind of died down. You had, in the first round of stops before that, McLaren just threw away their second place, which was a bit weird, because you had Sainz, Norris, Leclerc was the order, and then Leclerc and Piastri were the first to pit. And then one lap later, Norris pit and was down to P4, which seemed like they just threw away track position at McLaren for no real reason. But
I mean, the impression I got was kind of McLaren went, oh, we can pit, can't we? Oh, someone else's pit. We're in trouble. Lads, pit now.
Yeah.
It was kind of like they just very panicked. Yeah. Mm. It was very, very odd. But of course, it didn't, I think sensibly at the end of the day, Ferrari, I mean, maybe this weekend actually would have challenged Max anyway. Because they did look
Perez
very, very comfortable.
But
even Perez would because he finished a minute off.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think Max wouldn't have had it all his own way. I still think Max would have won, but
I don't think
it would have been as dominant.
Yeah. You know, you wonder if there's an element of, because obviously Ferrari were out in front, it was Charles, you stay put, that kind of thing. Mm. But I think, you know, had Max still been there, it might have been, you know, we split the strategies, we really try and put him under pressure, see if we can get him to crack. But Ferrari, you know, again, if you were, say, looking at Ferrari's trajectory over the last 12 months... Maybe that could be a team you want to move to next year. Maybe
someone's had that idea, haven't they?
So I think someone has had that idea, yeah. And I want to still get excited for that and keep reminding myself of that as the Mercedes power unit blows up. But yeah, I mean, obviously sort of after that, wasn't it? It was kind of watching to see whether fraud watch would... I mean, we mentioned this last week, didn't we, with Sergio Perez. Would it start to fall apart? And it kind of did, didn't it? He never got back to where you would expect Max to.
No, he overtook Russell and Alonso after the first round of stops up to fifth. And then kind of live, you think, oh, here we go. Not another Red Bull, just storming through everyone. And he had about 10 seconds to catch the back of Norris and the McLarens. And he just stayed there. If anything, the gap went up, despite fresher tyres and a faster car, you'd assume. Perez just was like, nah,
well, apparently
done.
He did have floor damage.
Yeah, he might have done.
From the move
but...
on Alonso.
It's interesting, isn't it? But yeah, it was strange that Perez just kind of got into fifth and then had a load of clean air. He's like, oh, here we go. And it never really materialised and he just stayed there the rest of the race. Which was a shame. And what a shame for him.
In a race where you want to be really proving yourself to the team as well, that, you know, I still deserve this seat. I mean, you may be doing better than the guy that Racing Bulls that is apparently meant to be having your seat. Fun fact
the
for
guy
you.
Predicted by you that would get a... his seat by Monaco.
And might not have a seat of his own by Monaco, where the rate is going. fun fact as well, Nyck de Vries in the first three Grand Prix of last year was closer on average to Tsunoda on one lap pace than Daniel Ricciardo's been.
That is very funny. And you do feel like Ricciardo's on borrowed time. And if you predicted him to be driving a Red Bull next year, or by round 8, then you're looking a bit,
you're a moron,
a bit silly right now, aren't you?
If you make that kind of prediction, never start a Formula One podcast where you claim to have knowledge. All I'm going to say. But I mean, yeah, really after that, the Australians got upset, didn't they? Did you see, I think it was like Channel 7 News or something, had a scathing report of the McLaren team orders?
I mean, it was the right thing to do. Norris was running an offset strategy, pitting a few laps later each time, so he was the bigger threat to Leclerc, and he did also catched like 2 or 3 seconds off Leclerc, which Piastri wasn't. So it was the right thing to do, and also happily missed out of the highlights. Piastri pit for the second time, came out, obviously had the opportunity again to undercut Norris, which he probably would have done, and then at the second last corner just made a lock up and went off the track, so he lost like 4 or 5 seconds and had then no chance to undercut Norris, and then the rest of the race just was falling back and back. So yeah, he didn't lose out on the podium because of the team orders. I don't think it was ever happening.
Yeah, I think sensibly as well. You know, it could have been one of those ones where the team went, oh, Oscar's, you know, 15 seconds back, swap the cars back with 2 laps to go. I also don't believe for a second Lando Norris would have done that either. I think he would have thrown a tantrum on the radio. But of course, again, another Australian who can't quite get a podium in Albert Park. Oscar Piastri will
Australians
definitely do it.
Australian teams always finish fourth at Melbourne, don't they? I think Webber had a few.
Yep.
Ricardo had a few. It's like, P4 is the most common position for Australian at Melbourne, it feels.
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, after that, it was kind of just, well, we kind of watched the battle for the final point, really, weren't we? Because it looked like Tsunoda was kind of
Tsunoda was down,
wasn't he?
Head and shoulders above the rest of the B tier.
The V Cub car is definitely clear of the rest, but it's definitely it's kind of fit the role of last year's Haas, but better on race pace. As in, it's comfortably clear in qualifying, unless your name is Daniel Ricciardo, and probably still has a bit more race pace than the rest, doesn't it?
Yeah, Tsunoda did very well, though. How always had the rest of the B tier at an arm's length, it felt like. Ended up finishing P7, which was boosted by a few DNFs and penalties, of course, which is probably genuinely going to be one of the best results all season for one of these B tier teams, you'd imagine.
Most likely.
Yeah, and then the two Haases as well did very, very well again in race pace after starting 14th and 16th to come through on good strategies, good teamwork, good overtakes up to P9 for Hülkenberg and P10 for Kevin Magnussen. Double points for the first time since Silverstone 2022, wasn't it?
And to be fair to Haas, they actually seem like they're becoming a bit of a serious team again. Komatsu.
I
think
what
it's unfair, yeah, but he's been doing a lot of good groundwork in that team behind the scenes.
Yeah, I love it. And as a Hülkenberg fan, once again, 2 points finishes in a row. He's not done that since he drove for Renault.
No. I was about to ask you this.
Oh, are you going to claim that 70th anniversary in Hockenheim and Nürburgring, sorry, were in a row?
Yes, technically they count as in a row.
Technically, they were 2 entries in a row for him.
Yep.
Fair play. But they're also, what, 6 or 7 races between?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, have that. But
I was
yes,
trying to hype
I'm,
up your
I'm
man.
I'm very
then.
Pleased.
I can't do anything
yeah, well,
about you.
70th anniversary, driver of the day.
Yep.
P3 on the grid.
Let's not forget, he did get outscored by Stroll, though, didn't he?
Yeah, because the team pit him with 2 laps
like
to go. Stroll the position.
So eggy. I mean, the final thing we've got to discuss though from the Grand Prix has got to probably be the most controversial bit, hasn't it? And that was obviously the incident between George Russell and his left foot, but also that was Alonso's fault.
Yeah, weird one. Last lap. If I had a nickel for every time a driver running behind Fernando Alonso for P7 crashes on the last lap in Melbourne, I'd have 2 nickels, which isn't much, but it's weird it's happened twice. So Russell has done his best Pastor Maldonado impression from 2012. Got a wash of dirty air, which was given by the back of the Aston Martin. Loses it and crashed into the wall.
I don't think it was a wash of dirty air. I think it was an Aston Martin car there on the racing line 40 miles an hour too slow.
Yeah. There was no contact between the drivers, but Alonso got a 20-second penalty, which is pretty harsh. For potentially dangerous driving. which at the time I thought that seems harsh when I woke up, because I obviously didn't, went straight back to bed at 6 a.m. when the race was done, and woke up and saw this penalty. But on reflection, I can see why they gave it, to be perfectly honest, because if a driver tries that at Stowe or at Puon or at Copse, there's a plane crash that's potentially going to happen. So yeah, I think the FIA did did the correct thing in clamping down on it early, because I trust that Alonso didn't mean to make Russell crash. He was trying to be clever with his racing lines. But you know, someone like Yuki Tsunoda or Kevin Magnussen will see that and be like, that's a good idea, I can do that when I need to defend from someone into Puon. And then they basically brake check on entry and someone's flying into the crowd. It wouldn't be a good look.
I think, though, it opens up 2 points. First of all, because I've seen it so much, for anyone saying, oh, well, Hamilton only got 10 seconds at Silverstone in 2021 for taking out Max. That penalty is effectively the same. Most penalties have just been doubled this year, haven't they?
Yeah,
that's why that's harsh, the case. Yeah. Second of all, Jamie, Formula One penalties, should they be for the cause of the incident or the outcome of the incident?
I mean, it makes sense to be the cause, because the bad driving is the cause, isn't it? The outcome you can't really control.
Exactly. Alonso has only been penalised for this now. How many times in literally Abu Dhabi, the end of last year, we saw him effectively do the same thing to Lewis Hamilton to try and make Lewis give him DRS? Yeah. Why suddenly now has he been picked up on this? Just because
crashed.
There's been a crash. That's not how F1 penalties should work.
No, it isn't. It isn't. But yeah, that's the way it does work, which is a shame.
Did you also see, after the race, Alonso, next time he came round, tried to pretend that he had engine issues? That is what I don't like about Fernando Alonso.
That's so clever, though, isn't it?
It's
got to respect it a little bit.
It's just a dirty tactic.
I saw a tweet that was like, Alonso is the type of guy to steal someone's crutches and then start limping.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's one of those things that so many people love Fernando for, and I just cannot stand about him. And I do get why people like it, but I just think Alonso, he's kind of one of these guys that tries to, you know, make himself out like he's, you know, still not sweet and innocent necessarily, but yeah, I think the weird thing with me with Alonso about this is how he'll race people wheel to wheel cleanly, but he'll still do this. I just don't quite get kind of where his morals lie. It's just odd.
Yeah.
In my mind.
I think he loves to be the villain of Formula One, and I kind of love him for it. So
I mean, there's one word to describe him, isn't there? And that is shithousery.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's very amusing to it's entertaining, that's for sure.
Richard,
there you go. Yes. So Alonso got a 20-second penalty, which also applied at the end of the race, I guess. You can't really control it. Obviously, they threw out a VSC because it was the last lap. Fun fact, if they threw out a VSC in 2023 Melbourne Australian Grand Prix, instead of a red flag, Nico Hülkenberg would have got a podium. There you go. Which is not me being salty at all.
I'm going to allow you your little bit of salt, because I'm going to add my own, of course. It's nice to be reminded again that obviously Formula One can end races under a safety car.
Indeed. It's fine now. Yeah. But yeah, Russell was on his side. It's quite a nasty little collision. And really, if it wasn't the last lap of the race, it absolutely would have been a red flag.
Oh, 100%. Sainz was basically at the line, though.
Yeah, it was a very dangerous position to be in. The radio from him is really quite scary. Because if someone doesn't, like, it's a cloud of gravel. If someone doesn't see that there's a car there, they could just genuinely plow through the floor, which would have been, like, potentially fatal. So I can see why he was so afraid.
I would argue less scary than Albon's last year, simply because there was nowhere near as much dust this time.
Yeah, but Russell doesn't know that in the moment, does he?
I'm not trying to claim that Russell shouldn't have been worried in that moment at all. But yeah, certainly, obviously still, you know, it's kind of one of those ones where, you know, in Formula One, you know, at racing at any kind of speed that Formula One cars do, and, you know, another series as well, you know, it can be the difference of millimetres that can be the deciding factor between whether a driver walks back to the pits or he ends up in a coffin, which is the harsh reality at the end of the
day. Motorsport is dangerous, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. But of course, yeah, yes. Whether it had been red flagged or put under a virtual safety car, it was the final lap of the day.
Yeah. And I think they didn't red flag it because then Russell would have still been classified.
Well, I think as well, you know, it's kind of that thing where some people go, well, if it had been red flagged, drivers would have been more cautious. I don't think necessarily that's the case. Stroll was far enough back that he was warned well in time.
And when it's a VSC, they obviously can't overtake anyway, so they're going to be driving as slowly as they need to be.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think given the FIA stick saying it should have been red flagged, I think is unfair. But yeah, you know, it kind of ended up, luckily, of course, in this instance, ended up kind of being a null factor, didn't it?
Yeah.
But it did mean Ferrari, their first 1-2 in Albert Park since 2004.
Indeed. And you have segued fantastically to my quiz.
Oh, no.
Because it was 2004, the last time Ferrari had a 1-2 in Melbourne. So there's two of your answers straight away. But you have to name the other six drivers to have scored points in that race. You have a minute. Go.
What, 2004?
Indeed.
Oh, dearie me. Kimi Raikkonen. David Coulthard, I'll throw him in there.
Yes.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
Yep.
2004 driver lineups. Trying to think who was there. Nick Heidfeld? No, he wasn't quite there yet.
He was. He did.
Oh, was he? Jarno Trulli, Giancarlo Fisichella,
yes.
Fernando Alonso.
No. Yes.
Ralf Schumacher.
Yes. I think you've only got one left.
I've already said Kimi, haven't I? Trying to think who else. Australia 2004. 2004? Who was racing there? Alexander Wurz, I don't know. Heinz-Harald Frentzen.
No. 10 seconds.
Felipe Massa?
No, DNF'd. No.
Jacques Villeneuve, Jenson Button.
There you go, Jenson
Button.
Fantastic. 2 seconds left, smashed it. Well done.
I'll take that one. I'll take that one in the end.
There you go.
Norris? He broke the record for most podiums without an F1 win. Finally, Nick Heidfeld only lays claim to the Formula E record for it, I think, still.
I mean, it's temporary, isn't it? Because Norris is going to win a race at some point, surely.
Well, you never know.
People said this about Jenson Button, didn't they, back in the day?
He'd never win a Grand Prix. Jenson Button!
Get in there. what a guy. James... Alan?
James Alan.
He's a great commentator.
I listen to him way too much on F1 Championship Edition. He gets really annoying.
Yeah. He's very, very hype and very, very British bias, but it's fun when you're a Button fan.
Exactly. And let's be fair, no one wasn't a Button fan.
Yeah, everyone loved Jenson Button. I still do. He's great. Yeah. Norris takes the lead. The only thing he's winning is the most podiums out of win. Ironically, but one day
the ability not to win.
One day, I am sure Nick Heidfeld will take back his crown.
I'm trying to think, Piastri could beat it before then. Who else?
14 podiums is quite a lot. And Piastri has two.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, probably. Heidfeld will have that record again. I think is fair.
I think Adrian Sutil will have the most podiums out of win record. Most. Starts without a podium record too, because he's going to get one still.
Oh, you still reckon that, do you? Fair enough. but Piastri. Oh, so it's Ferrari 1-2, so the third 1-2 of the year, but for a different team, which is quite impressive. Is it still 2010 or 2012 that has the most 1-2s for different teams?
Ooh, how many? Three.
It would have been three wouldn't it?
I think three teams had 1-2s in 2018.
Should have been four. Had Mercedes not broken down in China.
Yeah, true. Well, yeah, two teams. Only two teams have had it in any 16, 17, 18. No, I don't think. Did two teams? I mean, no, this is a stat that I have no idea on. I'm just waffling. So yeah, already two different teams have a 1-2 finish. which is a bit mad.
And
do we think McLaren will? Maybe. They could.
Actually, yeah, you never know. You never know. Have to wait and
I don't
see
think Aston Martin will.
No, I don't think Mercedes will, unless they go to a track that they're... You know, I think the only kind of big question mark is probably still Monaco, isn't it?
Yeah, what might happen there? Because every race now, every other new track is like set up to
basically a drag
build overtaking. Yeah. So like the running order is based on how quick you are in a straight line and around those kind of corners. Monaco is so different. So we could suddenly see like a random order. Obviously Alpine were really good there last year. So were Aston Martin.
Ocon was really good there last year.
Gasly got Q3 and a little P6 or something. That's not bad.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. I mean, well, I'm sure we'll talk about that closer to the time, won't we?
You know, Hülkenberg almost has double second places races without a podium. That's a good record.
I believe that. I believe that. interestingly as well, Jamie, Carlos Sainz now has the highest average points per race start this year.
Yeah. Yeah, two races. P3 and P1.
He's averaged 20 points to Max's 17. And it almost has given the false impression, if you were just to look at the championship standings, that there's actually
a tight battle
this year.
I saw people crying that they should have swapped the drivers.
That made me laugh.
Leclerc would be leading the championship. And it's like, what does it matter? Max is going to win like 15 races at least of the next 20. So
he's going to be over before, like with six rounds to go still. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day. Yeah, what a positive note to be towards the end of the show. Who was your driver of the day, Jamie183?
I am going to be boring and give it once again to Carlos Sainz.
I think that's completely right, and he deserves it this weekend.
And that chassis has had all three of the official driver of the day so far this season, which is odd.
Did he get it in Bahrain?
Yeah, he got it in Bahrain, and then Behrman, and now him again.
Fair enough. Race rating, like I said earlier on, this kind of exposed it, didn't it? That Formula One, actually, even when Max Verstappen isn't there, is still potentially quite boring at the moment.
It was all right. Well, I want to check what I've given the other races now. So I gave a 5.5 and a 6. I'll give this a 6, but bonus half because Verstappen didn't win. So 6.5.
I think that's fair. We'll go 6.5 on this one.
Like, we had a bit of excitement, but the middle bit of the race was the same as ever, just no Red Bull at the front.
It was basically the same story, just with a different car.
It's been two Ferraris and two McLarens in the top four since when?
Oh, no. Oh, man. Probably. It would have been somewhere in 2012 or earlier. 2010? No, because Mark Webber still finished like third that race.
Oh, I'm talking any race.
No, I don't mean Australia specifically. Oh, okay. I'm talking about any race. Have I missed one way more recently?
No. First one since Belgium 2007.
Wow!
Which is crazy.
You always forget that Heikki Kovalainen was nowhere in 08.
Yeah, he won a race with pure luck. But there you go. First of many, as he said on the radio.
Turns out it was not heart surgery. First of many. Fun fact. We wish him well, Heikki Kovalainen. Wow. If you want to come on the show, mate, I'd still have you on.
We'll have you.
It'd be a great listen.
I didn't just call your only F1 win lucky. Ignore that bit. in other news, our Stroll predictions. I got closer. P8.
You did.
Was my prediction.
You did.
And he got P6. P10. Stroll. Respect on his name, he's beating Lewis Hamilton in the World Championship right now.
So painful, man. So painful. Oh, man. I hate this. I hate this. What I don't hate, though, is in our predictions, because I kicked you this week. What were the scores going into this one, Jamie?
The scores were 11 to me and 5 to you.
I said Max Verstappen pole, 2 points in the bag.
There you go.
I said Max Verstappen win, pole. 0 points there. I said Leclerc P2, so I will take an eggy 2 points there. And I said Perez P3, so I got 4 points this weekend, and I believe you got one.
I got a big fat one, yes, with a Leclerc pole, which looked on and didn't happen. A Max win, didn't happen. a Perez P2, didn't happen, and a Charles Leclerc P3. So there's my point for getting Leclerc on the podium. Great.
Wham.
So that makes the scores 12-9. It's getting close.
I'm getting back in the fight. There is a very long way to go. But yeah, I just love that as well. You know, the idea that Charles Leclerc has been on fire in qualifying for ages. Suddenly we get to a Grand Prix where Max Verstappen has issues and Leclerc, of course, has thrown it away on Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's such a Charles Leclerc thing, isn't it? But still. Have we got anything else to add, Jamie?
Do we?
We've been talking for a while today. We've done very well on this one.
We did a little who's going to win Formula B. Again, I got closer than you. No points. But I said Magnussen would, and you said Albon would.
K-Mag
got a point. His first point in a little while, so I'll take that.
Fair play. Fair play, Kevin Magnussen. Thank you all so much for listening, as always. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like, get yourself subscribed. And yeah, Knowing Wheel will be back next Tuesday then to preview the Japanese Grand Prix. Yeah, Suzuka. It's early in the year, and I might actually have to get up for this one. I don't know yet. We'll wait and see.